Today we're interviewing Owen Phelps, who is head of this program called Lead as Jesus, and he's from Rockford, Illinois, Midwest, right down the road from where I used to live in Chicago. And he's going to talk about his program and give us some concrete examples of what exactly he's doing.
Well, thank you very much, Father Gene. I really appreciate you taking the time with me. I think I found my life's calling. Some years ago, I bumped into Ken Blanchard, the One-Minute Manager author, and found out that he was teaching a Christian leadership program called Lead Like Jesus. And we were really, really impressed with it, but it came out of a more evangelical background, and frankly, we thought there were some things that we could bring to it. And as it turned out, Ken was real excited to help us bring this to the Catholic audience. Since then, we've launched the Yeshua Catholic International Leadership Institute, and while we do a lot of different things, and there are several fellows within the organization, our focus is on Lead Like Jesus.
Where does that name Yeshua come from?
Yeshua is the Aramaic for Jesus, and so we wanted to, it's a biblically based program, and we wanted to go right back to the roots. Yeshua is probably the name Mary used when she called Jesus for lunch.
Oh.
So we thought that would root us clearly in the scriptures. One of the interesting things for me is that I teach for Cardinal Stritch University, and I frequently teach graduate programs in organizational behavior. And so one of the things I ended up studying was how organizations can be effective. And what was interesting is the research about organizations and about leadership ends up confirming what Jesus did and what Jesus said 2,000 years ago. It's just amazing. And so I found it really an exciting opportunity to take the best of what we know from modern research and the great wisdom of the scriptures, and in particular of Jesus himself, and bring them together to help people connect their faith lives and their lives as workers, as spouses, as parents, as members of their communities and parishes, into one very whole and complete perspective on things. The focus for us is, it begins with an understanding of those organizations we're a part of. The tendency has been, I think, for the last 150 years to see organizations as mechanisms. You know, we want it to work like a well-run watch. What we know from research, as much as we know from Scripture, is that we have to think of organizations as organisms. When we think of them as mechanisms, we're not necessarily wrong, but it so oversimplifies the reality that it obscures more than it reveals. But when we look at organizations as organisms, we begin to see all sorts of dimensions for how we can function as effective leaders, and for that matter, as effective followers. And of course, one of the things I get a big kick out of is all the latest, organizational gurus are saying, oh, we've got to think of the organization as an organism. And I'm thinking, I heard that somewhere before. Well, Jesus makes a passing mention, but St. Paul talks about this all the time. And in several places talks about we are a body. And as it turns out, all organizations are bodies, but most especially the church is the body of Christ. And when we start to see ourselves as a body, we start to realize some very important things about leadership and about being an effective organization. Especially this. With organisms, two things become immediately necessary. The first is diversity. We need diversity to live. I'm mindful of St. Paul talking about, if the hand should say, because I'm not a foot, I'm not part of the body, how ridiculous is that? We might translate that today and say, let's ask someone, what's the most important thing in your body? Is it your lungs, your heart, or your brain? And if you feel real bright and you're not intimidated by the question, you say, well, that's a dumb question. Because all of them are essential to life. And yet none of them are any good without the others. If the others aren't there, they're just dead weight, And so this notion of how something can be both essential in communion with the rest of the body and yet absolutely useless by itself gives us a huge insight into how people begin to really function effectively in organizations, and then how those organizations deal with the world and are effective themselves. So diversity is the first thing. We need diversity, we need different gifts in order to live, to have life in that organization. And then the other key piece is feedback. Feedback is so important. One of the things we realize, again, in modern science, is that we were able to develop machines that could make simple decisions, very good simple decisions, before we could make a robot to walk with a human gait. And the reason for that is that walking is a more complex process than making simple decisions. Now you say, what? That's crazy. I mean, the head does all the hard parts, and the rest of the body does all the easy parts. But, I mean, my goodness, you know, when's the last time we had to stop to think about breathing, you know, unless we were short of breath, unless things weren't working quite right. You know, that goes on all the time. And so we function, we live, because our body is whole body smart. All the organs know what to do, and all of them work together for the good of the whole. And this is an insight that we can take with us to make our families, our workplaces, our parishes, our community groups, all so much better when we understand that this kind of a dynamic, that we want good feedback. And good leaders create a safe environment for good feedback. And as we'll see, that requires a certain amount of humility to create that. Because if it's all about me, well, then I'm not going to worry about creating safe feedback. I'm going to just make sure that you tell me what I want to hear, you know, because that's good for me, supposedly. But it's going to be good in the short term. Long term, it won't be good for me. Long term, I need to know and benefit from all the feedback around me, so I need to encourage it. We use a simple example of that, if I can. You know, say you're walking down a narrow hallway and your elbow touches a hot heater. It gets burnt. Flesh starts to burn. What does the elbow do? Does it say, "Oh, head, excuse me, I got a problem here. Can you help me with this? Can you make a decision for me?" And the head's going, "Just a minute, I'm busy with something else. I'll get back to you in a minute or two." Well, my goodness, you could die and or suffer even greater pain. No, what happens is the elbow immediately stops the hurt. It moves away. In the church, we call that the principle of subsidiarity. You know, none of this is really new. It's just maybe organized and presented in a little bit different way. But the elbow moves away and fixes it at that level. But what if that was the end of it? Or what if the elbow said, "Oh, I'm going to be so embarrassed for doing something so stupid. All the other body parts are going to laugh at me. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. And I don't want the head to know about this. Oh, my goodness. I'll catch hell from the head. Oh, no, I can't." And so the elbow never said anything about the burn. Now, I know it's a ridiculous thing to even imagine, because in the body we don't deal with ego. But, you know, in the organization, that kind of an organism, we deal with a lot of egos. So that elbow might be there going, trying to protect itself. You know, it's got a little pride, and it's right now it's consumed with fear, so it doesn't say anything. It's interesting. Why do burns kill organisms? Why do burns kill people? It's not the terrible burning flesh, the awful smell, the pain. It's what happens afterwards. It's what makes it a burn fail is dehydration or infection. If the elbow doesn't tell the rest of the body, and if the rest of the body doesn't marshal its resources to help the elbow address those long-term issues, a relatively small thing can turn out to be fatal. And so it is in organizations, too. We've got to create those environments where, just like in our body, the elbow tells the whole body instantly, we have to have that kind of feedback. When something goes wrong, people have to feel free enough to tell other people about it, and certainly to tell the leader, and the whole organization has to figure out how to benefit from it. That creates a special kind of thing, and it creates a special kind of leader. If a leader is ego-driven, you know, if it's all about me, then I'm not going to be able to create that environment where you're encouraged to give me feedback, even if it's negative. And yet, that's what we need. So once we see the organization as an organism, a whole different perspective develops about what we need to nurture in the organization. And we need to develop the people in that organization to be able to give us better and better feedback, not hold them back. And, you know, each of us has to make a decision in life. We can put this in the context of leadership, but we teach that everyone who ever tries to influence anyone else is trying to exercise leadership. So at some point in our lives, all of us are called to be leaders, okay? And to be an effective leader, we make a choice. To be a person, you make a choice. What am I here for? Am I here for me? Am I self-centered? Or am I other-centered? Or as we would say, as believers, am I self-centered or God-centered? And if I'm self-centered, you know what's going to happen. I'm going to run on pride or fear or some of both. Because my life is all about protecting me, making myself look good. And it's all about me, me, me. Well, when that happens, the other people around us aren't nurtured. And to the extent that all of us have to work together to achieve some results on a larger scale, we perform as a group, as an organization, at a much lower level than we might if the leader says, this is all about the mission. And and what better example do we have in all the world than Jesus, who died, who freely gave up his life for the mission, who said, in the Garden of Gethsemane, this is not my first choice. If it's up to me, I would spend tomorrow differently. But this is not about me. This is about the will of my Father. And so we have this incredible example. And then, of course, we have his teachings that he who loses his life will find it. A rough translation of, I think, 4 or 5 references in Scripture that all organize around that. We have him saying, this is not about lording it over other people. This is about being a servant. And then we have an incredible example in Luke and especially in John, where he washes feet. And we ask people in the course, what would you talk about if you were at your last meal with friends, knowing you would die tomorrow? Would the table conversation be, oh boy, what did you think of the weather today? Huh? Or did you hear what happened to the market? Oh my goodness, it went down 100 points. And say, how did the Blackhawks do in that hockey game? Who's going to win the Super Bowl? We wouldn't talk about those things, not on that last night. We would talk about the things that are most important to us. So what did Jesus talk about? What did he do? Every Catholic gets it right. He instituted the Eucharist. All right, absolutely central. But there are other things he does. We deal with Judas' betrayal. We deal with Peter and his problems. And then we see, both in Luke and in John, we deal with how is it we're supposed to lead. He talks about that. In Luke, he talks about it, and he says basically the same thing he says in earlier accounts of Matthew and Mark. Don't lord it over people. That's not how we lead. We lead as servants. And then in John, my goodness, actions speak louder than words. He bends and washes the feet of his disciples. And when Peter says, you're not washing my feet, he says, oh, well, yes, I am. Because if I can't wash your feet, you really don't have a future with me. You have to let me be your servant. Peter says, well, then, okay, fine. Wash whatever you want, I love that big, impetuous Peter, overpromise, underdeliver, learn the hard way. And when he gets done washing the feet, then he tells them, why? I want you to know why I did this. Because I want you to do the same thing. Now, the exciting thing is, in modern scholarship about organizations, we're finding out that servant leadership really, really works. It's powerful. And it's counterintuitive to everything we learn. I think especially men. You're going to be strong, we're going to be a charismatic leader. Gosh, it would help if I was 6'5". Some interesting research by Jim Collins. It's gotten a lot of prominence in the last half decade. And he says, this notion of be a big charismatic leader. As a matter of fact, when we do see big charismatic and competent leaders, organizations show short-term benefits as a rule. But in the long run, they're hurt. Because when that person's gone, they leave a vacuum, and the organization never really fully recovers. True leaders develop the other people around them. True leaders are there to serve those people. And what we talk about in Lead Like Jesus is, think of it like the pyramid, the typical pyramid. The leader's at the top, the followers are, maybe at the bottom, maybe we're out here with the customers or the constituency. And that's a sense we have a hierarchy. And what we say? Absolutely valid. It's got to be there. Because when we talk about vision, that's the leader's responsibility. Now, he may bring people into the process, you know, to help him, his staff and all. And if you do bring people in, you tend to get more buy-in. But the fact of the matter is the ultimate responsibility for vision comes from the leader. But now what happens when we get to implementation? Now we turn the pyramid upside down. And the leader is at the bottom. And the leader's job, say it's a bank, to use that nomenclature, the president's job is to help the vice president succeed. And the vice president's job is to help the assistant vice president succeed. And they have to help the cashier succeed so that what? So that the customer gets the value that the customer came for. So now it becomes a matter of service. And, you know, exactly what Jesus did. And you talk about humility. He even said, and I have a hard time even saying this. He said, you will do better than I. Now, I don't set my standards that I'll ever do better than Jesus, but there is the expectation that he had that if we do this right, we could even do more than he did. But there's the big if we do it right. So we're hoping to help people develop the heart, the head, the hands, and the habits of Jesus-like leadership. It's not something we can just expect people to know or expect them to pick up along the way. It's been studied, we've developed a body of knowledge, we've tested it empirically, and we know that if people pay attention to this and work on it and work on it every day of their lives, we're going to see more and more Jesus-like leadership through the whole church, members, clergy, hierarchy, everything.
Thank you. How about telling us how to get in contact with you?
You can reach us. The easiest way is on the web. To go to our website, and it's www.yeshualeader.com. And I'm Owen Phelps, so my email address is ophelps@yeshualeader.com. That was the easiest way to reach us, and visit the website. Take a look at it. There's some materials there I think people will find interesting and I really hope helpful. I think they will. And we're excited about this. And I'm excited about you giving us the opportunity here today. Thank you.
Thank you.